Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true? They don't think Christianity's true. They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
You know, I was on a radio debate a week or two ago with a very good friend of mine. His name is Dr. Michael Brown. He teaches here in the Charlotte area. He also has a weekly radio program. Not weekly, it's actually daily. It's called Line of Fire. You ought to check him out, and you can get him on the internet. But I was on this debate on Michael's show. Michael, of course, he's a Christian. In fact, he's a Messianic believer, brilliant guy, written a number of books on Old Testament prophecy and understanding the Old Testament. And he also is an expert in witnessing to our Jewish friends. In any event, I was debating a gentleman on his show who was an atheist. And he tried to say that there is no archaeological evidence for anything in the Bible, which is actually quite laughable. And I brought up some of the evidence that shows that this gentleman is wrong. But we're going to spend a little bit more time on that issue today with my friend and executive director of CrossExamine.org, Ted Wright, who has a degree in archaeology from Mississippi State. And we're just going to jump right into the conversation right now. Ted's sitting right with me right now in the studio. And let me just start by asking you, Ted, what can archaeology tell us about the Bible?
Well, that's a great question, Frank. You know, a lot of people are interested in archaeology, and as you well know, we get a lot of questions at Cross-Examine, people asking about, you know, has this been found, has this been discovered? And, you know, I've been teaching seminary for about classes for about 10 years now, and as I teach seminary, I kind of sort of hone down what I believe the function of archaeology is. And as I see it, I think archaeology can do three major things. Number one, archaeology can affirm the historical basis of the text. Now, I don't mean that archaeology can prove everything in the Bible. All I'm saying is that archaeology, though, as a science, can affirm whether or not something happened as the Bible says it did. So in that way, archaeology can act as a forensic science. The second thing that archaeology can do is it can illuminate the background of the Bible. So, in other words, if we want to know what the world of Abraham was like, or if we want to know what the world of Jesus was like, then we can study the archaeology of the time period, and we can really get a great insight into the world at that time. And then the third thing, which is similar to the second thing, and that is that archaeology can help clarify certain passages of the Bible. Because obviously the latest text that we have of the Bible are about 2,000 years old, and in the Old Testament they go back about 3,000 years. So we're separated from the Bible, from the world of the Bible, by about 2,000 years. So archaeology kind of sort of helps us. It's kind of sort of like a time machine. Mm-hmm. It helps us sort of go back and try to recreate the world of the Bible.
Now, how far back do you think we can go in archaeology? What would be the time frame that you think we have, maybe our earliest archaeological discoveries related to the Bible?
Okay. Well, if you look at just the evidence itself, I mean, if we're just looking at the hard evidence, it looks like that human habitation goes back around 8 to 10,000 years ago. I know that within evangelical Christianity and within Christianity as a whole, there are different views about the flood and creation. You know, we debate about the age of the earth, but if you just strictly look at the archaeological data, it looks like humans, I mean, one of the earliest humans we've ever discovered was actually found by accident, by hikers in the Italian Alps. And this was Otzi the Iceman, and we believe that he dates back to the Neolithic. So this is the New Stone Age. This would have been probably during the late Ice Age or something like that. So,
which would be what year?
About 8 to 10,000 BC, somewhere in that time frame.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's still, I'm not exactly sure on the dating of that, but I know it's very, very early. And one of the surprises when they found Otzi was the amount of technology that he had. They thought that people back then would not have had the technology. And when I say technology, I mean he had like a copper axe head, mm-hmm, and not just stone tools. And he had hay, straw in his boots and things like that. So people were intelligent back then. So, but as far as cities go in major city building, we find the cities in a couple of places. And in Iraq is one of them. Sumer is one of the earliest civilizations. And one of the earliest cities in the world, which I find utterly fascinating. I've never been there. I'd love to go there. It's the city called Eridu, and it is in southern Iraq. If anyone is familiar with a map of Iraq, which is now in turmoil and war and things, but it's ancient Babylon. Just to the south, right near the Persian Gulf, is a city called Ur. This is where Abraham was from. But just to the south, just right to the south of Ur, is the city called Eridu, and it is sort of kind of southeast of the ancient city of Babylon. And one of the earliest mentions in the Bible, in the Old Testament, of something happening was the Tower of Babel. And when we begin to excavate at Eridu, we find that the ziggurats at Eridu actually predate Babylon by many, many years. So we believe that it's very possible, there's been some research done, that the ancient city of Eridu was actually the possible location of the Tower of Babel. Now, again, there's always debate about, you know, whenever we mm-hmm. interpret sites, but if just strictly looking at the evidence, it seems that Eridu was one of the earliest cities that had a possible tower that could be related to the Tower of Babel.
And that's very south in Iraq, probably very close to, say, the northern border of Kuwait.
Yes, that's
right
correct.
Now.
That's correct.
Okay.
And a lot of military, of course, it's amazing. I've got some students that were former military, and that, you know, they've showed me pictures of them based in Iraq and some of the amazing archaeological sites.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, it's
It would be amazing to wander around some of those ruins.
Yes.
Now, what about Sodom and Gomorrah? I mean, now we're back in the time of Abraham. So Abraham is what? Would you say 1800 BC, something like that? Is that a fair?
Yes. Around that time frame, there's actually some debate even among Christian archaeologists as to the time frame. But we believe that the time of the patriarchs, and this is the big thing, Frank, when you're talking about the Old Testament especially, one of the debates is not necessarily over the evidence of the patriarchs. Although some people do say, well, there's no evidence. The issue is the dating. And so depending on the date that you place the patriarchs in, but I think many conservative scholars place the patriarchal period in from around the early Bronze III. So we're talking around 2700 to 2200 BC. So in that time frame, maybe 1800, the problem is not just for Old Testament studies. The problem is for just ancient history in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this whole time period is still being researched and still being analyzed. But in that rough time frame, the early Bronze, late Bronze, middle Bronze, we believe Abraham lived. And you mentioned the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, which are mentioned in the Bible. They're mentioned in the Old Testament, and specifically in the book of Genesis, when Abraham leaves and travels with his nephew Lot, and they go to separate. Lot goes to Sodom and or Gomorrah, and Abraham, of course, stays out and keeps his sheep. But they went to a place called the Valley of Siddim, which is, if you kind of can imagine a picture of Israel,
mm-hmm.
and the Dead Sea is to the south.
Right.
Well, just to the south of the Dead Sea is the ancient Valley of Siddim. It's a plain. In biblical times, we are told that it was very lush and very, great for farming, and, you know, because obviously of the volcanic activity mm-hmm. around that area. There's actually a fault line that runs just to the eastern line of that valley. And funny enough, there are five cities that are located on wadis. These are dry riverbeds. To the north, there's the site called Bab Edra. To the south, that is a site called Numeria. And then there's three other smaller cities or settlements to the south of those. And interestingly, the Bible in Genesis mentions these five cities, and we also have extra-biblical reference to these cities as well. In the 1977, there was a site in Syria called Ebla, the Ebla Archives. This mm-hmm. is an archives of traders that did trade. Well, they mentioned doing trade with the five cities in the plain. So that's the only place outside the Bible that the five cities in the plain are mentioned. But to go back to the original question, Frank, about Sodom and Gomorrah, to the north and the south, of the far north city called Bab Edra, the site, the ruin, and the city just south of that, these two cities actually fit the biblical description of Sodom and Gomorrah to a T. These cities were destroyed in the early Bronze, and they all have amazing evidence.
When we come back from the break, we're going to see what kind of evidence we have. So you're actually saying that potentially some scholars are saying they found really the city of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yes.
We're going to look into evidence right after the break. I'm talking to Ted Wright. Has a degree in archaeology. He's also the executive director of our ministry, crossexamined.org. And you got to check that out on the website, crossexamined.org. That's cross-examined with a D on the end of it. I'm Frank Turek. Back in 2 minutes.
Welcome back to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network. If you're low on the FM dial looking for NPR, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. That's our intent anyway. We're talking today about archaeology. What can it tell us about the reliability of the Bible? And just before the break, we began talking about Sodom and Gomorrah. And my friend and colleague Ted Wright, who has a degree in this kind of thing, is saying that there's some evidence that they may have found literally the city called Sodom and Gomorrah, or the cities. And Ted, fill us in. I mean, this is news. What do you mean we found Sodom and Gomorrah?
Yeah,
it's not one of our more racy cities. You're saying it's somewhere really over there?
It's really over there, right. Yes. Yes, there. And the research is not obviously. I didn't do the research, and the people that I'm reading, some of the scholars that I'm reading, haven't done the research. But the Jordanians and other scholars have done research in the southern part. Did a survey of the Dead Sea area, just south of the Dead Sea, in a place that used to be called the Valley of Siddim, which is mentioned in the Old Testament. And we believe we found these five cities on the plain of the Valley of Siddim, and the two northern cities. One site is called Bab Edra. And the other city is called Numeria. And these cities, when you trace the when you look at the language and you trace the language back to the original Western Semitic languages, they do have some connections with the word Sodom, our English word Sodom. But these are ruins. These are found in the northern or the southern part of the Dead Sea area, and again the Valley of Siddim. And the scriptures tells us in Genesis 19, verses 24 and 25, concerning what he did to these cities to overthrow them. It says, the text says, the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, including all those living in the cities and also the vegetation of the land. Now, we read that story, Frank, and obviously we know that there's a lesson there, and the question a lot of Christians have is, you know, did this really actually happen? Is this mm-hmm. just some story that's made up, or did this actually happen? Well, I'm the conviction and the belief that this actually happened, and we have actually discovered these cities. And again, the city of Bab Edra, the site, the ruin, and the city of Numeria are the cities that we believe are Sodom and Gomorrah, and they have destruction. In fact, beginning in 1977, the city of Numeria, just to the south of Bab Edra, was excavated. Every room in the city was full of ash and debris from burning. We found the walls caved in. It was full of ash, full of burnt sulfur, exactly like the Bible said. In fact, there's one slide that I have on a presentation that I have that actually shows a room that had collapsed with burning debris, and there are two individuals in the room buried under the ash. The interesting about that is that in the Dead Sea area where it is, it's actually a geological fault line near the Dead Sea Plain. And the cities on the plain, all those five cities, not just Bab Edra or Sodom, but all the five cities sit right on that fault line. And at times there have been eruptions that have caused really hot debris to come down on these cities. And these two cities were discovered exactly where we believe they were.
Now, a skeptic will say, well, this could be just explained by a volcanic explosion, couldn't it?
Sure. Sure, it could be explained by a volcanic explosion. But that's not the point. I mean, my point would be in archaeology would be the biblical text, obviously, archaeologists deal with material artifacts.
Right.
We don't necessarily, even though sometimes history does cross over, archaeology, though, acts as a forensic science in the sense that it can try to figure out if this happened. So as far as the causes, you know, why did this explode at this time, you have to have other types of data. And so the Bible presents a scenario in which the reason why the city was destroyed was because of the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, because it's quite frequently said that I think a lot of people try and de-supernaturalize the Bible. They always try and come up with a natural explanation for a supposed miracle.
Sure.
Right? And, you know, we see this over and over again. And you're saying, well, all archaeology can do is look at the data that remains.
Yes.
What caused it? Whether God caused it directly or a volcano did it, that's another
exactly.
question.
Okay.
Yes, Frank. And as you know, and obviously with our ministry at Cross Examined, we believe that there are four vital questions that have to be in place in order for the New Testament message to be true. And that is, there has to be a God. Truth exists. God exists. Miracles are possible. And we believe the New Testament is historically reliable. So in the New Testament, Jesus talks about the Old Testament mm-hmm. and refers to the Old Testament as actually, you know, being true. And in fact, he scolds many of his believers, many mm-hmm. of the believers of the day, for not believing in the Old Testament. To go back to a point that I wanted to mention earlier, in Luke 24, Jesus, when he was on the road to Emmaus with his disciples, they didn't recognize him.
Right.
Remember that? And he scolded them, and he said, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And then it says, "And then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them all that was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." So Jesus has a very high view of the Old Testament. And so as far as the causality factors, if there's a God, then certainly the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, could very well have been destroyed because of their sin. But now, archaeology can just show us that it actually happened.
Okay, so that the city was destroyed. Now, are there any archaeologists outside of yourself, and I guess maybe some others who reported this, who are saying that this really could be Sodom and Gomorrah? I mean, have they said that?
Yes. One in particular that I one archaeologist that I respect and admire is Dr. Bryant Wood.
Sure.
He is an archaeologist from the organization called the Associates for Biblical Research. Mm-hmm. You can check out their website. In fact, we will put it on our blog, Cross Examine. I'll put some of the article links on our blog for
okay.
those who are interested today in looking at some of these articles, you know, some of the more scholarly aspects of the articles and the reasoning why we believe these are actually the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah.
You know, it's hard actually to describe some of these finds on radio because we're talking about maps and pictures and these kind of things. So we'll put this on the blog, as Ted said. In fact, it'll be on the blog here momentarily. So you can go to our blog at crossexamine.org and look up some of these articles and the pictures that we're referring to yourself to see what we're actually talking about here. But that is quite interesting to say that some scholars are actually saying that this could be the true Sodom and Gomorrah.
And just one other thing to add, Frank, as far as Sodom and Gomorrah goes. Now, they're mentioned in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, but another place that they're mentioned outside the Bible, again, is the city of Ebla, the Ebla tablets. In 1974 and 1975, it was excavated by the Italian archaeologist Paolo Mattei, I guess that's how you say his name. Anyway, it was this huge archive of cuneiform clay tablets. I believe it was Akkadian. I'm not exactly sure of the dialect. But anyway, these archives actually mention in the same order the Bible mentioned of the five cities and the plain, and the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah are mentioned by name as well. So
by those Sodom and Gomorrah.
In the Ebla tablets.
Okay.
Yes, in the Ebla tablets.
Which are these tablets found in Syria?
These tablets are found in Syria, yes.
Right.
And they are actually mentioning that they actually traded with these cities. So these cities are not just invented, made-up cities.
Okay.
And these are cities that really did exist. So if they did exist, then where are they? And we believe that those cities just to the south of the Dead Sea, those five cities located near the Valley of Siddim, were actually the cities that are mentioned in the Bible.
Now, that is fascinating. And again, go to our blog at crossexamine.org to learn more about this. Let's fast forward, say, 400 or 500 years, Ted. Let's go now to Moses.
Okay.
Say we're in the 1400s or so B.C., what kind of evidence do we have for the Exodus and Moses?
Okay, great question, Frank. First of all, let me just mention about the dating. You mentioned the date of 1400 BC or thereabouts, and one of the questions that the big question really concerning the Exodus is not necessarily the evidence per se, even though that is important. The important thing about the Exodus is the dating of it. How do we know when it happened? Because a lot of people will say, "Well, there's no evidence for the Exodus." But the thing is, you remember in Indiana Jones when Indy and his buddy Sala were trying to beat the Nazis,
mm-hmm.
and they figured out they were looking in the wrong place.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's what's going on here.
That's why a lot of liberal and critical scholars are looking in the wrong time frame for the Exodus. They're looking. They say, "Well, we're going to look in 1200 BC for the Exodus. Up, we don't find it. It's not there." Well, the thing is, they're looking in the wrong time frame.
They're not only looking in the wrong time frame, they're looking in the wrong place, literally,
yes.
Which maybe we'll get into in a minute. So they're looking at the wrong time and the wrong place. And when you look at the right time and the right place, you're going to see some evidence that the Exodus actually did occur. I think pretty compelling evidence anyway. Okay, so let's just say that the Exodus did occur in the 1400s BC, which is what the Bible seems to indicate.
Yes. According to 1 Kings 6:1, the Exodus occurred 480 years prior to the laying of foundation of Solomon's temple. You've got a 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 1. It actually makes mention of exactly 480 years. So if you do a little calculation, Solomon undertook this event in the fourth year of his reign, so around 966 BC. So the Exodus then must have occurred around 1446 BC. So if you just look at the biblical data of the Exodus, it puts the Exodus around 1446 BC. So with that date in mind, we can then look at the Egyptian evidence, and this is where it gets a little tricky because there is still some debate about, even among Egyptologists, about the dating of the pharaohs. In fact, there was a new study that just recently was published. Someone sent me concerning the chronology of the Egyptian pharaohs based on radiocarbon dating. Mm-hmm. But my initial reading of that is I'm a little skeptical about dating pharaohs. The reason why I say that is because if the pharaohs and the dynasties of the pharaohs have a certain date attached to them, then that's going to conversely affect the dating of the Exodus or conquest. So I don't want to get into all that. But so let's just assume, though, that a 1446 BC date of the Exodus. Well, now we know who the pharaoh of the Exodus was. And if we look at the 18th dynasty, this is the based on the new chronology, it looks like Amenhotep II would be the pharaoh of the Exodus. And we actually know a little bit about him. Very interestingly, from palace walls. There's actually, I believe in Luxor, a big, huge mural that shows him hunting on a chariot. He was a very skilled archer, and he was a military guy. He would do these military campaigns down into Palestine or down into Israel, and he was very, active and very a lot of bravado, mm-hmm. So which would explain Moses' reluctance to go. Remember when Moses was in Midian, Moses didn't want to go to Amenhotep II because he knew this guy was, he wasn't playing around.
And by the way, for those of you listening, Ted just said the word Midian. When you think of the word Midian, you ought to think of the eastern side of the Gulf of Aqaba, because that's where Midian is. And if you go and look in your Bible, you're going to see Midian is on the eastern side. It's not on the Sinai Peninsula. It's in what is called modern-day Saudi Arabia. Now, put that in the back of your mind, because when we come back from the break, that's going to be a clue as to where the real Mount Sinai is. But, Ted, you think it's Amenhotep II is the pharaoh of the Exodus.
Yes.
All right. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about some unbelievable finds regarding the Exodus, and also the plagues. These plagues were not just kind of random slams by God on the Egyptians. They were specific. In fact, they were directed at the Egyptian gods, which is what we'll see right after the break. I'm Frank Turk. You're listening to Cross Examined on the AFR Talk Radio Network. Back in 2 minutes. What archaeological evidence do we have for the Bible? Right now we're talking about the Exodus, and we're going to get into that in just a second. Before we do, I got to tell you about our new app. Yeah, Cross Examined has a new app that you need to have. It's free. If you go to the App Store or you go to wherever you get apps for Windows-based machines like a Droid, get the app called Cross Examined. Two words, you'll find it. It's got a section in there that we think is very helpful. It's called the quick answer section. So you're in a conversation with somebody, they say something that contradicts Christianity, you don't quite know how to answer it, you pick up your iPhone, your iPad, your Droid, you go to the quick answer section, there might be an answer to the very objection that they just brought up, because we're putting common objections and quick answers to them right there in the app. So check it out, the Cross-Examined app. Also, this podcast that you're listening to right now, or you might be listening to it on radio, all of these programs are right in the app. So you don't have to go hunting on the internet for them anymore. You can listen to them anytime on your phone, on your iPad, on your computer, wherever you want to be. And the unique thing about this is that they're categorized not just by date, but by subject and also by guest. Because we try and do evergreen programs on this show. In other words, a program we did 3 years ago isn't necessarily outdated because we're talking about evergreen material. You wouldn't be able to find it if we just listed it by date, but if we list it by topic and guest, then you can find it. So this app is a very, very useful app. You need to get it. It's, again, called the Cross-Examined app. It works on iPhone, iPad, Droid devices. If you can't find it on the App Store, just go to our website, crossexamined.org. Click on Media. You'll see it right there. It'll bring you exactly on the or exactly to the place on the internet you can to download it. Now let's go back to my friend Ted Wright, the executive director of Cross-Examined. Ted, we're talking about the Pharaoh of the Exodus, who appears to be Amenhotep II. Tell us more about this guy.
There's a lot of new, interesting things that we're learning about Amenhotep II. Not new, but some things are becoming into clearer focus. There's a recent article that I read by a archaeologist, Douglas Petrovich from the University of Toronto, and the article is toward pinpointing the timing of the Egyptian abandonment of Avaris during the middle of the 18th dynasty. That sounds like really fun reading, mm-hmm. doesn't it, Frank?
Yeah, sure. I was just reading that yesterday in People Magazine.
In People Magazine. But anyway, in this article, he talks about there's an Egyptian city called Avaris, and it was abandoned in the 18th century. Or 18th century BC, yeah,
okay.
From Amenhotep II. Now, the interesting thing is that
I'm confused. I'm confusing myself with the dating. If it's 1800 BC, 18th century, do you mean 14th century BC or 18th century?
18th dynasty, excuse me.
Oh, 18th dynasty.
Yeah,
okay,
yes.
So are we talking –
We're talking 1400 BC.
1400 BC, yes, okay, because I say that would be 400 years before the Exodus. So this is the same time as the Exodus.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
All right,
I'm sorry, I didn't make that clear.
Yeah, pick it up, go.
I'm sorry about that. 18th dynasty, yes, during Amenhotep II's reign. Now, one of the things we learn about, again, that we have already knew about Amenhotep II was that he did these Asiatic campaigns. But there's something very peculiar that happens in the ninth year of his reign. In the ninth year of Amenhotep's reign, he does some things that are very interesting. He commissioned a decree for his courtiers to destroy all the images of the gods, singling out Amun-Ra in particular. Now, given the fact that Thutmose III and Amenhotep II, they did give praise to Amun-Ra for military victories for some of their campaigns they had in Asia Minor, and other places. Why would he tell his courtiers to destroy the images of these particular gods? In fact, he also interrupted the priesthood of Amun during that time as well. This also, according to this article by Petrovich, coincided with the abandonment of the city of Avaris. And the significance of the city of Avaris was that it was a military outpost. So, again, and I'm reading into this article. I'm not exactly sure this is what Petrovich is saying, but what I'm saying is that it's possible that there's some event, some momentous event that took place during the ninth year of Amenhotep's reign that caused him to abandon doing military campaigns. In fact, after the ninth year of his reign, he never went back into Asia. He stayed in Egypt, and he abandoned all the Egyptian gods. Now, what event could that have been?
Right, right. Well, I'm trying to put two and two together here, Ted. I think we may have. Where is this city of Avaris, geologically?
Geographically,
I mean.
It is in the it is sort of in the south, well, in the north, northern part of Egypt, kind of sort of in the Goshen area.
So this would be between
between the Sinai and Egypt proper.
Okay, so a little bit to the east, it might be an outpost whereby he might have had contact with the Israelites. Is that the
idea?
Well,
not just the Israelites, but also. It's actually right on the Nile, but also it was like a military outpost. So it would be where he would kind of keep his army. But if something happened during his reign, here you have this really bravado pharaoh,
right.
And he's doing military campaigns, and all of a sudden he just says, "All right, this all come in, just bring it all in, and let's not go back and do military camp." What would have caused him to do that, unless it was something traumatic that happened to his military? Which we know, according to the biblical text,
right.
They were drowned in the Red Sea.
So you're saying that he knocks down these images of the gods?
Yes,
the Egyptian gods.
Yes, yes. He has a turn of heart, and he has a turn of policy according to the Egyptian gods. And this is based on this article by Dr. Petrovich, which you can get. Anyway,
why don't we put a link to it on the blog,
sure,
too, if we can
we'll
do
sure
that?
Do that.
Let's transition now, because that's a very interesting concept. And you pointed this out to me a while ago, and I think we've talked about this on the show before, but it's worth repeating, that the plagues in the Old Testament, in the Exodus account, against Egypt are not the kind of random plagues. I mean, you know, there's the Nile turning to blood, the frogs, the gnats, the flies, the plague on the cattle, the boils, the hail, the locust, the darkness, and finally the death of the firstborn.
Yes.
These are not kind of random slams. They are specifically directed at Egyptian gods. Just explain a couple of them, particularly Ra.
Yes. Ra was the sun god. I mean, the thing about it, Frank, is that let me go back and just kind of preface this by saying that if Moses, as we believe, wrote the Exodus, and if he experienced, if he was trained as an Egyptian, he would have understood Egyptian culture. He would have understood Egyptian religion. And so, as well, it's interesting that the plagues correspond to Egyptian gods. Each plague corresponded to either one or multiple Egyptian gods. And the biggest one is the last one, actually. You have Ra, which is the sun god, the son of the god of light, the god of life. And this is the ninth plague, and found in Exodus chapter 10, verses 21 through 29, where it turned dark. And so the plague of darkness was a judgment on the Egyptian god Ra.
So this might explain why Amenhotep II, the pharaoh during the Exodus, decides that he's going to destroy images of Ra.
Yes. Yes. Hmm. May explain. That's
May
all
explain.
I'm,
yes,
all I'm saying quite... is it it does provide, like archaeology, let's go through the three things you can do again. It can affirm, it can clarify, it can illuminate. So this provides illumination as to a possible motive as to why Amenhotep II would have wanted to do this. But I think the biggest one, Frank, is the 10th plague, which is the death of the firstborn. And this was an affront to the divinity of Pharaoh himself, because in Egyptian religion, Egyptian cosmology, the pharaoh was considered divine. He was considered to be a divine god king, and so the fact that he couldn't even save his own son's life was an indication that it wasn't the pharaoh that was in control. It was God that was in control, or Yahweh, more properly. Osiris also was a god that was the giver of life, and in fact, the pharaoh wanted to sort of emulate the god Osiris, and he so.